Good morning and welcome to From Me to You on Hippie Radio 94.5. And we have another person who's joined the ranks of repeat offenders. And that is Mike Stewart, who's with us again today. Good morning, Mike.
How you doing, Richard? I love being a part of the Beatles. You know, From Me to You just means so much to me and glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. And Claudine Iannucci has braved the pandemic and gone into the studio for us. Thanks, Claudine.
You're welcome.
So Mike is a bass player extraordinaire, and he's a Beatles person, and he has a Hofner bass, of course. He's a good friend of my friend, Buddy Kalb, and this might be a good time. I've not mentioned this yet, but one of my best friends ever, who is one of Buddy's good friends too, John Ragsdale, died a few weeks back in his home in Panama. He fell off his roof, actually, and succumbed to the injuries there. So we're sending out love to John Ragsdale, who was aware of the Beatles and appreciated what they did. And we send our condolences to John Ragsdale is Ray Stevens' brother. And Buddy may as well be their brother because he is. And Buddy is who introduced me to Mike. So there's how that worked. So, Mike, what are we going to do today?
You know, the last time we got together, there were so many Beatle bass lines, we couldn't cover them all in one show. So I picked out some Beatle bass lines that are just, they're iconic. And there's reasons that they're iconic. And then, of course, when you hear the bass lines being played on the record by Paul, you just go, oh, my gosh, three notes of these bass lines and you know the song. And I think that was the sign of an amazing bass part, was the fact that the bass lines were signature hooks of the songs themselves. So I've got a little list here. You want to go down some of my favorites?
Go one by one. What's first on that list of yours?
You know, I looked it up today. The number one bass line by Paul McCartney that is just top rated by all the fans is Come Together. That song intros, it's in the key of D, and of course I'm going to play the bass line here in a second when I get my bass out, but it just has an iconic melody that John plays a little bit of guitar. He makes the sound effect of shh. We're not even really sure what John says over that bass line. And then,
I think we are sure, actually. He said, shoot me, is what
okay.
He said.
Well, as a kid, we used to think it was probably something else. But at any rate, Ringo had one of the most iconic drum lines because, you know, he was a left-handed drummer. So when you got bump, dum, diddle-da-dum, and then all those drum parts, that bass line is just magical. And, of course, you know, Aerosmith had a hit with it. They did a version of it, and they didn't change the bass line at all because that bass line, which is in the key of D, is just so unique. And in fact, musically, one of the things that's really interesting is that Paul puts the minor third at the top of it, the F, which really is just dissonant and just makes all that mystery sound to it. But it's just driving, and it's iconic, and it's a melody in itself. You know, they used to call Paul one of the most melodic bass players in the world because not only was his bass line supportive of the rhythm track, they were melodic statements that stood on their own. I mean, I could sit and listen to that intro Come Together by itself even before John's voice came in. So we'll play a little bit of it then.
Okay, well, let's play you playing the bass line to show it to the listeners, and then we'll go from that straight into the song.
Slowly
Okay, that was Come Together, and that was Mike Stewart on those bass lines to begin with. And you said something that, to me, as a student of the English language, have no idea what you just said. A third something on the dissonant. What was that?
Well, that's for the musician fans out there. Being a student of music theory and of music harmony, the Beatles were great teachers of harmony and music. George Martin, he was an oboist, he was a pianist, he was an arranger. He knew the rules of music, and the Beatles didn't know the rules. So they would do things that a music teacher would say, no, no, you can't do that. That's dissonant. That doesn't sound right. You don't play an F natural against a D major chord. You know, that was the mindset of a teacher. But the Beatles said, no, no, it sounds good. They were experimentational harmony enthusiasts who just, when it became established and you heard the recordings, then you realized, no, no, they were right. They were creative. And so when you talk about bass lines, you can't leave out the music theory. And, of course, that's one of the things I'm a fan of, is the fact that they did so many things that broke the rules of traditional rock and roll and music. Everybody that knows the notes of a D chord is D, F sharp, and A, and Paul played that F natural against it, which just made it sound so cool. And back in, you know, at the time, 50 years ago, that was just like, whoa, did you hear that? And that's called dissonance. Some people would call it a mistake. We used to know in music, when you do it over and over again, a mistake starts sounding like you meant to do it. It was never meant to be a mistake, but mistakes sounded real. That's the theory lesson for today about the Beatles.
Yeah. And what's interesting to me about what you just said is, you're actually right, is that Lennon wrote the song. Of course, we know now that he lifted it from You Can't Catch Me, a Chuck Berry song, which has Here Come O Flat Top in there. But at this time, this is when the Beatles are breaking up. And what's wild about it all is the Beatles are fighting like cats and dogs outside the studio. But the thing is, when they walk into that studio, it all stays at the door. And they become the same band as they were in 1963 when they're first recording at EMI Studios. And John lets Paul have all that fun with that bass line. And Ringo, who John worshipped anyway, they probably told him how to play the drums, but he had that great drum situation. And then Billy Preston actually is still around and playing the keyboards on that. I mean, that's just an amazing record. So Come Together, I mean, what a record. So let's go straight to the next song on the same album, Abbey Road. The Beatles are still fighting, and George has a song this time, and George and Paul really didn't get along. But matter of fact, he did say that he thought Paul kind of got a little overzealous with the bass line on this one, but I think it fits perfectly. So tell us about the bass line on Something.
I think this was when really George was just becoming the equal songwriter. You know, he was overshadowed. I mean, I can't imagine being in a band of songwriters of John Lennon and Paul McCartney. But he always got to do a song on all the way back to the first album. Don't Bother Me was the first George song that was on the first American album. But when we get to here, you know, he gets two songs on Abbey Road. And Something, which was, I'm sure you know, was written about his bride, who later became Eric Clapton's bride. But at any rate, it's a beautiful love song. It's not your typical chord progressions. I think that's one of the things that George was really great about his writing, is that he starts the song, it's in the key of C, but it has a chord of F, E-flat, G, and C. And so when you have all these non-traditional chords in a song, major seventh, seventh chords, I mean, he's all over the place. It's not a three-chord song by any means. And so that gives Paul the ability to make these melodic bass lines that really stand on their own. And so that's why I picked Something as one of the top bass lines of all time, because he goes boom, da-da-da, and then he has da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. All these what are called 16th notes runs in a ballad. And George's beautiful melody. And then if you think about the transitions that George came up with, the one little area there when it goes to the key of A and it has a chromatic downsend, you know, we've heard it before, it goes dun, 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 dun. That's all a chromatic passage. So, I mean, this song is just chock full of amazing lines that I think a traditional bass player would have probably kept it a lot simpler. Maybe George wanted it simpler, but you know, we Beatle fans of Paul's bass playing were just like, oh, this was a masterpiece. And so I'll play a little bit of it and show you the parts that really amazed me. And then when you hear Paul play it with the record, it's just, you see the magic.
All right, let's listen to Mike first, and then let's go straight into Something. Hear Paul McCartney imitating Mike Stewart. Thank you.
attracts me like no other lover. Something in the way she woos me. I don't want to leave her now.
And that was Something. That's the second song on Abbey Road, which is, again, the Beatles' swan song. And many people thought they knew it was, and now there's evidence that they were planning another album, but who knows. We have Mike Stewart with us, who's a great bass player. He's also, let's get this out there, you're playing on July the 10th and then on the 25th, is that right? Or
on the 30th, yeah. In fact, we have got a patio, socially distant, safe gig that they want us to come monthly because we were beginning to get a little momentum before the lockdown and the pandemic, which when we're recording this, you know, we've been suffering that tragedy, you know, for many weeks now. And so all of our ability to go out and play live was just ended. But the Cool Springs Kings Bowl Whiskey Room, which we don't know if the Whiskey Room's coming back, they are building a stage out on the patio, which, you know, is outside, and it's going to be socially distant with hand sanitizer. And I think people are ready for some live music. And for, I was honored that they said, you really fit the crowd down here. People loved it. So we got a residency there. They want us every month. And you can go to NashvilleBeatlesJam.com and look at the appearing live tab there. And all the dates will always be current, no matter when you hear this show. But just remember, you can go to NashvilleBeatlesJam.com. Click on the appearing live and then show you how to make a reservation and stay out on the patio. And, you know, the only thing that would stop it is if a bad storm came up, and we're praying that we'll have good weather all summer and fall.
And what's the name of your band?
The Nashville Beatles Jam, NashvilleBeatlesJam.com. In fact, you know, I am an internet marketer, and so I have gotten my website. If you Google Nashville Beatles, I am the number one Nashville Beatles site in the world because of what I know about the internet. And I did that purposely so that folks could know that if they want to have some fun sing-along Beatles and oldies with us, my guitar player Gary Talley of the Box Tops, Steve Goody of the Bluebird, he's our drummer, and Steve Creech, we're just Beatles fanatics. We're a sing-along band. We don't look anything like them, but we sure have a good time playing those songs and getting people to sing along.
Yeah, and you couldn't have a better group with you. Gary Talley's one of my great friends, and I've known Goody forever. As a matter of fact, he borrowed my 12-string Ricky for his video on the those things you do or don't do or whatever you call it.
Well, he's a funny guy, and he's a great drummer. He's a talented musician, and I started meeting folks when I moved to Nashville, and I saw some of our other friends with the Wanna Beatles. I mean, those guys are also really dear friends and a great Beatles band, and I said, you know what? I want to do that, but I'm not going to sit around and wait to ask to join somebody else's band. I just started my own and started asking guys. And I asked Gary, I said, Gary, do you know any guitar players that want to play in a Beatles band? Gary said, I do. That's how you put bands together, is you go get a gig, and the next thing you know, you can put a band together.
Yeah, Gary's wonderful and a great man in addition to his musical ability.
Yeah, he's the most talented. In fact, I helped him with GaryTally.com. Guys, go check out Gary. In fact, I've been playing with the Box Tops. That's another thing that we can't wait till we can play again. I actually tour with the Box Tops to play keyboards. Barry Welsh, great husband of Gretchen Peters, an amazing musician. Sometimes he's playing with Gretchen, and so I'm the second string Box Top keyboard player.
Is he an original Box Top?
No, the only two original Box Tops are Gary Talley and Bill Cunningham. The rest of the fellows, Alex Chilton, who was the reach of the singer, sadly, we lost him in 2010. And John, I forget John's last name, I don't believe it's Hammond, he was the original keyboard player, but unfortunately his health doesn't allow him to tour at all.
Interesting thing about the Box Tops is that they're starting to draw more and more and more as years go on. This is not a reflection on Denny Lane, but he sold 99 tickets or seats to City Winery, and the Box Tops sold it out in about an hour, so they're really popular.
Well, you know, the Box Tops had four amazing top number one and top 10 records. You know, they're a little bit older than me, but not a lot. But I remember those songs. They were just Cry Like a Baby and The Letter. I mean, The Letter is one of the top songs of all time. And so there's a lot of baby boomers like myself that just love hearing those old songs. They were part of the Memphis magic. And getting to be friends with Bill and Gary, well, I've been friends with Gary for many, many years, and to get to play with them is a dream come true. And they're all Beatle lovers. You know, in fact, there's a picture of them in the studio with Bill Cunningham, their bass player, with a Hofner. Bill and I have had a lot of Beatle-Hofner discussions on the road. And then, of course, we were in Texas playing, and they closed the whole state down, and we had to fly home, and we haven't played since February of this year in 2020. So we're looking for it. In fact, they're supposed to play the City Winery, and I'm sure Barry will be on that particular gig, but I'll be there in August of this year. So.
All right. Well, we hope something happens, because it's getting worse every day as we speak, at least.
Yeah.
So I'll go to the next song, and then we'll take a break. What's the next song on your list?
Drive My Car, which was a John and Paul song. Paul and John sang harmony pretty much all the way through it. John had the lower part, Paul had the higher part. But it had this driving bass line that was doubled with George's guitar. And it's just, you know, you just didn't hear bass lines like that. It's dum 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 dum. And it was, I remember as a kid learning it, it was da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I mean, that was fast. And at the speed it did it, ask the girl what she was. Da, 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 da. So I'll play it here in a minute to let you hear what it sounds like. But if you listen to that bass line driving with Paul and John's voice, and of course they had beep, beep, and beep, beep. You know, who would think of background vocals but the Beatles, but beep, beep, and beep, beep. Yeah. I mean, there was magic. Now, that was Revolver, I think, in America, and you know all the albums, because I didn't have the British albums. Drive My Car was really a Rubber Soul song, if I'm not
mistaken. Oh, well, it was Rubber Soul. Okay. Well, you're going to play the bass line. And then
Let me show you a little bit of the bass line right here.
Okay, there's the bass line.
One other thing is that Paul played the lead guitar on this, and what an amazing lead part on this. Paul did a lot of leads that George didn't do. So anyway, one of my favorite all-time bass lines and Beatles songs of all time, Drive My Car.
Asked the girl what she wanted to be. She said, baby, can't you see? I want to be famous, a star on the screen. But you can do something in between. Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. Baby, you can drive my car. And baby, I love you. I told that girl that my prospects were good. And she said, baby, let's
looking for peanuts. It's all very fine, but I can show you a better time. Maybe you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. Maybe you can drive my car, and maybe I'll love you. Beep, 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 yeah. Maybe you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star.
That's Drive My Car, and we need to take a break right now. I'd like to thank the Omni Nashville Hotel and Kitchen Notes Restaurant for sponsoring during all this madness and sadness, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to From Me to You on Hippie Radio 94.5. We are doing this remotely. I'm on Monteagle Mountain, my favorite spot in the world, besides Liverpool. And Mike Stewart's at his home, and Claudine has braved it all to go in the studio to make us sound good. We're staying safe and staying home. And Claudine is, except when I make her do this. We're glad to have Mike Stewart, the great bass player, with us, who's with Nashville Beatles Jam, right? Is it Nashville Beatles Jam?
NashvilleBeatlesJam.com. Always remember the jam I gave you to put on your toast.
I know, and I ate it. It's gone.
Well, I have to get you another jar of it. We got
yeah.
That.
I was going to say that earlier. So can they buy the jam on your website?
You know what? Why would you want to buy a CD of us playing the songs? The Beatles did it better than we could. So we have T-shirts and jams and honeys. We have Honey Pie Honey, a Strawberry Fields Jam, and Blackbird Berry Jam available right there on the website.
And I got to tell you, I am a connoisseur of jam. And it is good. I don't know where you get it, but it's darn good.
It'll be a little secret I'll tell you another time.
All right. An interesting thing, you said, why would they buy our CDs when you get the Beatles? You know, there's this band called 1964, The Tribute, which is you know, one of the best Beatle bands there are. I was talking to their merch guy one day because they sell their own records. And I said to him, it's interesting you would have 1964, The Tribute, having recorded Beatles songs that sell. And he said, you'll never believe this. I kept getting so many requests. I made them do it. That year, which was 2004, when they played one of our Beatles festivals, he said, we sold $500,000 of 1964, The Tribute, and like 50,000 of the Beatles. Because they already had the Beatles, but it's weird.
In marketing, a CD today is a souvenir, and people want to have a memento souvenir of the live experience.
That's a great analogy.
If we were as big as 1964 or Rain or some of the other big tributes, it would make sense. But you know what? We're old friends who don't want to travel very far. We want to stay in Nashville. Yeah. And so I thought, okay, rather than having CDs that everybody sells, we're the Beatles Jam. Why not sell jam? It has our picture, our website, and something good to eat that looks at stares you in the face every breakfast. So it was a marketing lesson.
And see, that's what sort of irritated me at myself, is because you gave me some of the jam the first time we met. I was going to save it as a souvenir like I do other guests on the show. And one day I didn't have any jam. And I said, And so I ate a little. And then the next thing you know, it's all gone. It's really good. I hate to turn this into a commercial for your jam. That's not what we're up to. Buy that, and then they should go see you and hear you, but certainly, and it is a souvenir, and I'm going to go on your site and buy some in a minute. But collectors, if you want to collect everything, there's something you need. All right, let's go to the next Paul McCartney bass line.
Well, you know, if you go all the way back to Sgt. Pepper, one of my favorite Beatles songs, even though John didn't like it as much, but being for the benefit of Mr. Kite, another song that John wrote that wasn't three chords. There's augmented chords in there. It goes into all different keys. If you think about the production that Jeff Emmerich and George Martin did, all those things are magical for that record. And, of course, the lyrics came from that iconic poster that all Beatle fans know about. Pretty much all the lyrics of the song are on that poster that John had. But I love listening to the anthology because when they recorded the track, Paul was on bass. Generally, in Sgt. Pepper, Paul overdubbed bass. He would play piano or he might play guitar, and then he would go back in and add the bass, like with most of the tracks from Sgt. Pepper. Even though they were on four-track, Paul would come up with the bass line. But he did this particular bass line, and when you hear him with his pick rehearsing, I don't know if you hear the outtakes of one of Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kai, but it's like, don't, 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 don't. I mean, it's got all these melodies. And I'll play a little bit of it to show you what I'm saying, but that's one of my favorites, that it's just not a typical simple bass part. It's got all these amazing melodic chords, and one of the things John used to love to do, he loved what's called time signatures. He would love to put in odd measures, extra beats, and of course, Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite has a waltz in the middle of it, and Henry the Horace does the waltz, and it goes from 4-4 time to 1-2-3, 1-2-3, and of course, Paul has to follow those bass lines because the time signature. You know, Ringo didn't know music. He didn't know 4-4 from 3-4, but he could learn it, and then he could master it. And, of course, his human feel. When you mesh all of this stuff together, and to think they did this on a four-track tape recorder, oh, my gosh, it's magic. So here's a little bit of the bass part to show you what I'm talking about.
Mike Stewart on the bass part of Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite. If you're a Beatles fan, you better say it all, not just Mr. Kite. It's Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite. Well, a lot of people actually leave off the being. They usually say for the benefit of Mr. Kite because that's what Lennon said.
Being for the benefit of Mr. Kite.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. And what's interesting is, as you know, George Martin was talking to Lennon. Lennon said, make some noise to where it sounds, where people can smell the sawdust at a carnival, I think is quote. And that's when McCartney made the first tape loops, or took the tapes, and went and just cut them in a million pieces and threw them up in the air, and then they taped them all back together. And that's that some of that Calliope sound, too.
Well, you know, it was original sound effects records of real Calliope. And when they cut it into pieces and threw it in the air and then taped them back together, and some were backwards, there was no rhyme or reason, but it just made this magical noise. And then, of course, George Martin was such an incredible keyboard player. He was playing what are called chromatic descending lines on the Wurlitz organ. And John and Paul were playing on a keyboard. So it's just, you know, once again, it's Sgt. Pepper, really from Jeff Emmerich and Rubber Soul out, is when they became the experimental studio band. You know, George bringing in all the different instruments, like the Indian instruments, and they just did things that, you know, it's like every time an album came out, you go, oh my gosh, what is that? What is that sound? What are they doing? How did they do that? And that's why I said if I ever met Paul McCartney, I'm going to say thank you, teacher. He was the greatest music teacher I ever had in my life, and I hope he lived and I lived long enough to say thank you, teacher, because that's what he did. He taught a whole world of music people how to play and how to think and how to get outside a creative box. So anyway, Mr. Kite is just a magical masterpiece. I can't believe it's more than 50 years old.
Well, let's listen to Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite.
For the benefit of Mr. Kite, there will be a show tonight on trampoline. Hendersons will all be there. Late of Pablo Bank is there. What a scene. Over men and horses, hoops and garters, lastly through a hogshead of real fire. In this way, Mr. K will challenge the world. The celebrated Mr. K performs his feat on Saturday at Bishop's Gate. The
Hendersons will dance and sing as Mr. Kite flies through the ring. Don't be late. Mrs. K and H assure the public their production will be second to none. And of course, Henry the Horse dances the waltz. Performs his tricks without a sound, and Mr. H will demonstrate 10 somersets he'll undertake on solid ground. Ding ding, some days in preparation, a splendid time is guaranteed for all. And tonight, Mr. Kite is topping the bill.
And that was from the Sgt. Pepper LP, and I have to say that Tim Kite, K-E-Y-T, was a classmate of mine, and every time I hear Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite, I think of Tim Kite. So there's a shout-out to my friend Tim Kite, who I've not seen since 1973. But anyway, what's funny is that was only 5 years after Pepper, or six. But anyway, what's next?
Well, there's another amazing bass line that I think is just so full of just unique melodic approaches, which is on Sgt. Pepper, the finale, A Day in the Life. A Day in the Life was recorded with Paul on piano, John on acoustic guitar, and I don't know if Ringo overdubbed his drum parts or if he played them all at the same time, but I know it was John and Paul was on piano first. And it's a very simple piano part, but Paul overdubbed his bass line to that whole section. And it's just, it goes through different keys. And in fact, the middle section, Woke Up and Fell Out of Bed, that was, I guess, another song, completely different song that Paul had started and maybe hadn't finished. And so it was full of different chords that you can tell it's almost a totally different song. The first part that John wrote was in the key of G, and what Paul wrote was in the key of E. But they went through it. That has the bit where Mal Evans is counting down the measures, because they didn't know what they were going to put on it, which then, you know, they got the idea to put the orchestra explosion, mm-hmm. which is what I called it. And then, of course, the big piano ending that took six people playing one piano chord at the end and then pushing up the volume controls so that the piano lasts forever. I mean, all that magic. But when you get into the bass line, it was a melody unto itself. And when I play it, you'll see that it's Day in a Life with nothing more than just the bass line.
An interesting side note on that, and I can't remember exactly what happened. Maybe you can. But you did. There were six piano players, right? Is that right?
Right.
Playing the same chord at the same time. Well, Ringo was one of them, of all things. And he missed his by a little bit. And they nudged him, and it scared him. Because, you know, in those sessions, he said, reflecting on them, he said that's where he learned to play chess. He was so bored because John and Paul and George Martin were doing all those things. But I think they nudged him, and he missed the pedal and hit, you know, a millisecond late. I don't know if you've ever heard that story.
I know if you put headphones on, you can hear the piano benches squeaking.
Yeah, there's
and
that.
And it was just an amazing creative thing. I mean, you can hear that one piano note. In fact, I think when the anthology came out, they took that one piano note, which was not played on the original session. I mean, they recorded just those pianos by themselves and physically with splicing tape spliced it on to the end. So, you know, that piano note was just a session by itself. The innovations that those guys did were an inspiration forever. And once again, there was no bass on that final note. Those were all pianos.
You can speak to this, but the musicians that played on Beatles records at first, and I'm speaking of symphonic type orchestral arrangement, George Martin used to take the time and he would arrange the parts for the chamber quartets as they had on Yesterday and other, and all the other strings, and even Alan Civil and Dave Mason's trumpets and things throughout. Martin would write what they're supposed to play. But as the Beatles got more in control of their own sessions, they'd say, bring in the London Symphony, and we'll figure it out when they get here. And it drove those guys crazy.
Oh, yeah. They were traditional, schooled, classically trained musicians, and this was just improper. You write it on the page. And, of course, you've heard the story, and we fans have all heard the stories of start here and end there. That just did not compute with him.
And just go as high as you can go, as fast as you can, or whatever.
But you know what? It wouldn't be what it is. There's no way they could have written it down and it come out sounding that way. It was the fact, the randomness, and, of course, they participated reluctantly, but it worked. And it was an aural explosion. I think that they didn't have the budget for the full symphony. They had a partial symphony, and so they didn't tell the musicians that they were keeping it, and I think they did it three or four times to make it bigger so they didn't have to pay all the guys.
Yeah, I think they eventually put clown's noses and pig-type noses on them to make them loosen up a little or something.
Yeah, they did do that, but I love, if you listen to the anthology, there's Paul talking, the tape is still rolling, and he's got comments. He says, you know, they're very suspicious of what we're doing. You know, what are you trying to do here? You know, and he's talking about his defending what he did. You know, Paul, you didn't have to defend it. It was magical creativity, and it was part of one of the best bass lines on the whole, you know, in the whole album up to that time.
Well, let's listen to A Day in the Life.
I noticed I was late. Found my coat and grabbed my hat. made the bus in seconds fly. Found my way upstairs and had a smoke, and somebody spoke and I went into a dream.
That's A Day in the Life. You've heard quite a bit of commentary on it from our guest, Mike Stewart, NashvilleBeatlesJam.com, and Claudina Iannucci's in the studio. Let's take a break right now. I'd like to thank the Omni Nashville Hotel, Kitchen Notes Restaurant, where hopefully someday you can get some Beatles jam, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to From Me to You. We have Mike Stewart with us from NashvilleBeatlesJam.com. Highly encourage you to go to that website. While this is not a culinary show, the jam there is unbelievable. T-shirts are good, and Mike Stewart's an amazing bass player. We are thrilled to have him with us. Claudina Iannucci's running the board and making us sound good, and she's braved the pandemic to go into the studio. We appreciate it. Mike is playing two dates coming up with Nashville Beatles Jam that include Gary Talley and our friend Steve Goody, who's been on the show a few times. I forgot your other member.
Steve Creech, who is a great mastering engineer. And I don't know if there's anybody more Beatle fanatic than you, Richard, but me and Steve are close.
Well, I'll have to have him on one day. All right, so we're talking bass right now. We're going to do a keyboard show later on. What are you talking about now?
These were Paul bass lines. I actually used the Google today and I said, what are the top bass lines by fans from Paul McCartney? And Silly Love Songs, even though it's not a Beatles song, it's a Wings song. If you think about it, it is a melodic bass intro. And I'll play a little bit of it to show you. You can hear that intro and you know the song. And in fact, John Lennon was quoted.
And before you go, let's listen to you play the intro. There's the intro. What else do you know about that song?
John wasn't a big, I don't think was a big fan of Wings. But
I don't think he was either.
Yeah, but he did mention that this was one of the, you know, even though he didn't like the song, he thought the bass line was pretty creative and pretty outstanding. So for John to recognize the power and the melodic integrity of that bass line, because it is a simple song, it's a good melody. One of the things that I loved about the harmony of it, it's a C, E minor, and F major 7 chords, three chords, but he's got counterpoint melody, and counterpoint means multiple melodies happening simultaneously, not in tandem. You know, when two people sing the exact rhythms and melodies and words together, that is harmony. But counterpoint is when you've got multiple things going at the same time. So that song is really filled with a lot of counterpoint.
My friend Charlie Little and I were traveling the world, our world, at the time of that release. And we had our own lyrics for that song, which we'll not mention right now. But we were not appreciative of the counterpoint or the C7 different harmonies and all the things. Anyway, shout out to Charlie Little. Thank you.
I'd like to know, 'cause here I go
And that was Silly Love Songs, and maybe it is one, but it was good, and the bass was incredible. There's no doubt he's a genius.
He was inspired, and he had a command of creating simple but creative, unique motifs of musical ideas. It wasn't just lyric. I mean, his command of melody and chords are just second to none, and there's not many people that were that gifted, probably the most gifted that's ever been in the world. I mean, they compared the Beatles to the classic masters, to Beethoven and Brahms and the Three B's and Chopin, Debussy. These were all people that I studied as a piano student, and their melodies and their genius was evident hundreds of years ago, but McCartney had it too, and then he was able to make it rock, and he was able to sing it. I mean, you know,
yeah,
being able to write it, play it, and sing it is a powerful combination.
And you know what? When I was younger, before the year, any time when I was younger, if I'd read those comparisons that someday they might be compared to Beethoven. This was when they said they may be. Well, now we're 50 years in, and really, someone will think this is sacrilege. They are as good as Beethoven and Brahms and Bach and Tchaikovsky. And I mean, they are that good.
Absolutely. Classical music had a complexity, and most of it was instrumental. Beethoven did write, you know, like Ode to Joy was a big Beethoven composition, and most of the stuff was written for symphony or church back in those days. Once again, the complexity of the things they created are, in my, well, I like it better, so maybe a classical musician would say they're not equal, but in my mind, they're superior in a lot of ways. So
I get it. All right. Well, it's been great having you with us, Mike, and hope to have you back next week or the week after. And on the next show, we're going to the keyboards, right?
Just what Paul did with the bass, he did a lot with the piano, and I'd like to talk about six or seven of the top piano things. So the early Beatles didn't have a lot of keyboards in it, but the later Beatles did.
I'd like to thank the Omni Nashville Hotel and Kitchen Notes Restaurant for sponsoring the show this morning, and we'll be back next week.
For our last number, I'd like to ask your help. Would the people in the cheaper seats clap your hands? And the rest of you, if you just rattle your jewelry. Thank you. We'd like to sing a song called Twist and Shout.
Say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.